found.
When my Rinpoche was explaining Vajrayana to me, he said, to see all experiences as the arising of the meditational deity, and to hear all sounds as the mantra of the deity. So everything gets transformed into this vision because it's an expression of the deity, or we might say the divine, yes? And I remember then after that, one of my Dharma brothers, we were traveling in Delhi together, and Delhi is, you could call it Delhi or Heli, you know, right? I mean, it is very intense, and it's very busy, and it's very loud, and it never sleeps. It's all 24/7, right? India is really on the move. And he was becoming a little agitated from the sounds and the dust and the motion, and I just said, Om Mahum Benza Guru Pema Siddhi Hum. I knew his practice was with Guru Rinpoche, Padmasambhava, and it just brought him back into, you know, that experience. So it's very helpful. And Murshid here is telling us in that way, my thoughts create my happiness and unhappiness. I choose, I will discover God in every experience. What's the divine impulse always arising, right? What is it? All of it. All of it. And then the second day, which was just yesterday, by the way. Yeah. What was the first one?
Quest.
Right. We know, and we heard that in, those that were sharing in the circle today, I was astounded at how many people, you know, 20, 30, you know, more years ago, the crystalline moment, the crystalline memory was my first camp. My first camp, the quest. Well, this happened at my first camp, and that was in, you know, 1983 or something. How many of people said that, right? It was the quest. So that's the idea that in the Valley of the Quest, you know, the story is Farida Dinatar. We're beginning the quest. And we are so open at that point, aren't we? The world is becoming quite transformed, and we're receiving through dreams, visions, hearing, nature, it's all there, and we're very open. And then we went into
love.
That's what I was,
We start to fall in love with, and they even talked about that too, how that arose for many people just at a very personal, earthly level, but that we also saw that people were so touched by their experiences with meeting their teachers, with meeting someone that would become a beloved, with meeting, you know, that those moments were so important to them, and that it was this flowing of love that perhaps in the world we're not always so receptive to, because we're cautious to not be made a fool or to be too open. You know, sometimes that happens, but here there's a safe haven where, well, we're all fools together. Yeah. In the most beautiful way, right? The court fool is the one that the king goes to for advice. Never forget it. Right? Not all those wise men.
He's the one who tells the truth.
He's the one that tells the truth, right?
Sees everything.
And sees everything, right?
Tells the king he's a fool.
And then after the Valley of Love came?
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's not just quite ordinary knowledge. Yes, that may be part of it. And we gain mastery. Mercia talked about gaining mastery through our accomplishments. But it also is that divine knowledge that we come to. Okay. This is the newest Murid and youngest.
I thought it was interesting that love had to come before knowledge.
Yeah.
noticed that when you talked about that yesterday, it was like, ooh, and about the dryness of knowledge.
Yes, that's right.
It was really important.
Yeah. And Murshid said that it could become so dry. Yeah. And we see that, you know, I don't know about for you, but I read, early on at least, now it's just an icon, but Piero Murshid, an icon. But it used to be I would read different authors on Sufism, and in other traditions too, certainly translations in Tibetan Buddhism, and you get a feeling from if it's just purely academic, you know, translation, or if it becomes somewhat, it's like what Coleman Barks does for Rumi, right? It's so beautiful, and it's so seamless. He's extraordinary. Quick story, though, I have to tell you. I was invited to speak at a conference in Sufism in California, and Coleman Barks was there. And he was presenting his poetry. And so he, when he showed up, it was like, oh my God. He was at the counter checking in. It was late at night. He had traveled all the way across the country. And I just went and I stood next to him and I said, I don't care if I appear like a fool, but I'm a groupie. I just totally love you and I just want to stand next to you. And he went, okay. And then he said, I'm just really tired. I've just been on this long journey. And I said, oh, well, and there were three of us there, Karima Gita and another friend of ours, and we were just like so silly. I mean, we were really, but really honestly, I want to thank you for your life's work. It's brought so much, you know, to my life. And he looked at me and he said, oh, it's not work at all. You know? So sweet. So sweet. Another quick story. This must be what needs to be said. One of the poems that he read was about, he told this story about himself. One of the things that he's always liked to do, even from a child, is to pick up a cat and to touch them in such a way that they purr, you know, he would talk like that, purr. Have I told this story? And he said, I had a friend at the university that's in veterinary medicine, and I was telling him about this. I had written the poem and I was sharing it, and he said, that's very interesting, because the cat purrs with satisfaction, but also when the cat is ill, it purrs because the vibration heals it. Yeah. The mysticism of sound and vibration. Just that it's self-soothing and it helps to heal them. Isn't that beautiful? I think so. And don't you do that anyway? Kind of when you're not feeling well, you do go. We do that a little bit, and I think it's
a cat's purring is supposed to heal bones. Like if you have major back surgery, they put a machine that they take out to that simulates a purr. And so your bones heal a lot quicker if you have
actually
that,
one thing we can do
in certain vibrations.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really, yeah. I'm allergic to cats, but it's probably good to have one around, isn't it? Well worth the Benadryl.
Or a purr machine.
Yeah, a purr machine.
It's also very emotionally.
Yeah.
Too, because they're, you know, I have found that when I'm in a really a state, you know, either really sad about something, you know, or feeling ill myself, that just having a cat and purring really is very soothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But thank you for sharing that. I think that's important knowledge to be shared, because I really do think that we have devolved in our medicine which I think they're coming back to again, understanding the vibration. And I think that's part of what we have the capacity to do in the healing work, those that are healing. It is through vibration that we send that vibration to someone. But it's not necessarily words or touch, I don't believe, you know. I think touch is very important, but I think also the vibration that we're sending off is very meaningful. I think you know that from when you feel certain things, the baby's responding to you, yeah? So, I really, you know, in Tibetan Buddhism, they use the bowls with the vibration on the body to either draw on the various centers to either draw in a harmonious vibration or to extract a disharmonious vibration, depending on how they're turning the bowl or the stick is. So yes, I mean, I think those ancient traditions remember it. We've forgotten it, but they are using it in medicine too. Yeah. So we went up to the valley of knowledge, yes, the third valley. And we worked with Wasi, and we'll talk about that more. I'll explain it again for those that weren't here. But now, I didn't bring this up yesterday because I was afraid you wouldn't show up again. So now we're in the fourth valley, and it's the valley of annihilation. Can't wait. Because how many of us go through this, right? So these are the words of Hazarat Anayat Khan again on... For Rita Dinitar. And after the third valley, where the knowledge of human nature and of the fine feelings, which are called virtues, it's coming up again, is attained, the next step is annihilation. But what we call destruction or annihilation is nothing but change. Neither substance, nor form, nor spirit, nothing is absolutely destroyed. It is only changed. But man sometimes does not like to change. The suffering of attachment. Yeah. He does not like it, but he cannot live without it. There is no one single moment of our life when there is no change. Whether we accept it or not, the change is there. Destruction or annihilation or death might seem a very different change, and yet there are 1,000 deaths that we die in life. A great disappointment, a moment when our heart breaks, is worse than death. Often our experience in life are worse than death, yet we go through them. At the time they seem unbearable. We think we cannot stand it, and yet we live. If after dying 1,000 deaths, we still live, there is nothing in the world to be afraid of. He's going to get back to the idea of sky, which he spoke of yesterday. And we made the analogy to how when we're children, how many of us have laid on our backs or looked at the sky and said, where is that? Where's the beginning? Where's the end? You know, it's just this, the mind can sort of go in these infinite circles outward to attempt to comprehend that vastness. So he gets back to this idea here in this teaching. The idea that there is one sky, which is our own being. In other words, we can call it an accommodation. And what has taken possession of this accommodation? A deluded ego, which says, I. it is diluted by this body, by the mind, that it calls itself. When a man has a ragged coat, he says, I am poor. In reality, his coat is poor. Not he. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, says it this way. If someone picks up a stick and hits us, we always get mad at the person, but we don't think about the stick. I mean, he's trying to make us think about things in this way, you know. Think of them differently, sort of, in a way, deconstruct them. So he goes on to say, what this capacity or accommodation contains is that which becomes his knowledge, his realization, and it is that which limits him. We were talking this morning about the unlearning that's necessary. It forms that limitation which is the tragedy of every soul. It's like we build the cage and then we jump in it and lock the door, right? God.
Now we say,
let me have it. Yeah, right. Yeah. Now this capacity may either be filled with self or it may be filled with God. There is only room for one. Either we live with our limitation or we let God reign there in his unlimited being, her unlimited being. In other words, we take away the home which has always belonged to someone else and fill it with the delusion and call it our own, and not only call it our own, but even call it ourself. People are afraid of losing themselves, but they do not know that non-attachment is not losing one's self. It means losing illusion. And in reality, it is only by losing this illusion that they can find themselves. One's soul has become lost in this illusion, and the process is to get out of it, to rise above it. And you know, so many of you know this very well, the Sufi dies before death. And the truth is with every breath, you know, we don't know, we think we know, but we also know people that healthy, happy, they took that last exhalation and there was never another inhalation. Right? We don't know. I think this is really the value of the etheric breath. At the closing of the elemental breaths or also in the purification breaths we do it. Because if you think about it, it is absolutely that. You breathe in. You come into a very small space, that of limitation, and you breathe out that expansion. One's like Yahai, one's Yakayum. Life and everlasting life. Practice it. And if you have someone in your life who's ill, help them by practicing it for them. It will help us make that transition.
Person?
You just offer that for them, you know, vibrationally. Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure they're taking care of it.
So let's, can I read just a little bit more? Okay.
Yeah.
I think, oh my gosh, we have some things we have to get through. So after this valley of annihilation, you know, we've kind of stripped things away and we help to overcome the idea that this limited self is who we really are. And it really is about a form of surrender, I think, you know. I think. You may think another thing, but I have always found if I give up trying to figure it out and I allow myself to really truly trust that the divine hand, God's hidden hand, is in all things, like we practiced last spring, it's something's unfolding that I can't yet see, but it's happening nonetheless. And people around us and situations are being used as that agent to help develop toward some sort of greater purpose. If we can trust that, then we can start to see that unfoldment without resisting it. It's a form of annihilation too, because we take ourselves out of the center of that equation. Of course.
You know, because things, opportunities arise in one's life, but it doesn't mean that we necessarily are aware of them, or that we, even if we are, we make the choice to take them on. And so, do we sometimes stymie that growth, and then until we're ready for another door to open up? I mean, just because they're there doesn't mean that we're going to walk through it, right?
Oh, I think we, and Mercia talks about that in other teachings, divine will along with human will. And it's a really beautiful body of teachings, because yes, that's where, I mean, the line of fate is not necessarily drawn in such a way that we can't adjust that in some ways.
Yes, yeah. Because I think of all the missed opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking back and then wondering, well, will I be more conscious? Will I be more accepted now? Because I missed a lot along the way.
Well, I think we have to make choices. It's part of life. So the next valley after the valley of annihilation is the valley of unity. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Better.
Better, yes. And now remember, if you're reading the Conference of the Birds, along the way, there's like this huge, you know, group that's taking up this journey. And at each step of the way, right?
There's fewer and fewer.
Fewer and fewer. It's like, this is the place I'm going to stay, right? And we do that ourselves, that Mershad was talking about that, that we're maybe afraid to take that next step or to let go of something in order to go on. And so in the end, there are going to be very few birds that are going to end up with the bluebird of the sky at the last valley, because they stop, oh, this is like where I want to be, and they stay there, right?
I'm just hearing the last line of the Five Powers is lost along the way.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So we have to imagine we're on this journey with our bluebird. So the Valley of Unity. By the time the fifth valley, the Valley of Unity, is reached, one has disillusioned oneself, and it is this act which is called in the Bible rebirth. So we've dissolved and now we're coming again. Fana and Baka. Fana and Baka. La Elaha El Alahu. It's all there in just that one phrase. The annihilation. This is not. No. 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 Yes. 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 Right? The eradication of the small self, the birthing and resurrection of the true self. And it is this act of the disillusion of oneself, which is called in the Bible rebirth. And when the soul has emerged from illusion, it is the birth of the soul. And how does the birth of the soul express itself? What does one feel? it expresses itself first in a kind of bewilderment. Have you ever had that experience? And maybe that's just the right word. Some people, I think, don't use the word bewilderment very often anymore, but we might call it, I feel confused, or I feel lost, or I feel, but it's that idea of bewilderment, you know, like, almost like maybe a newborn babe coming out of the comfort of the womb, and it's like, wow, this is a lot of stuff I'm dealing with here, right? So it can be this bewilderment with great joy at the same time. And some people we know on the spiritual path have even gone into a kind of, you know, we've seen it. They'll fall into a kind of mania, you know. A man's interest in life is increased. All that he sees, he enjoys. He concerns himself with a few things but wonders at all. This bewilderment is such that it becomes wonderfully amusing to look at. The whole world becomes a kind of stage for him, full of players. He then begins to amuse himself with the people of his world, as one might play with children and yet not be concerned with what they do, for he expects no better. If children do something different from the parents are not much concerned. They know it is the stage of the child's life, and they cannot expect any better. So likes and dislikes, favors and disfavors may interest him, but they will not affect him in the least. Right? It's a goal. Ollie Cotter, I'm hearing you repeat the lines from the third patriarch of Zen. Yep. The great way. You want to say it for us?
Well, the first line, everybody knows, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences.
The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. This neither likes nor dislikes. Remember the first day we talked about the sun. That the great beings, they're like a sun. They radiate without, with complete equanimity, without discrimination on all. They just shine and radiate. And what are they radiating?
Light. Love.
Love. Love. They're love streams. Yeah. So, the Valley of Unity. The Valley of Unity. My thoughts create my happiness and my unhappiness. I choose to see God in all experiences. Next comes the Valley of Amazement. There's another stage where this bewilderment becomes... There is another stage where this bewilderment brings a man to see the reflection of the one who has taken possession of his heart. This means also to see one's beloved in everyone, even in one's enemy, even in one's enemy. The beloved is seen in all things. The soul is made of love and is going towards the perfection of love, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty. All the virtue man has learned, love has taught him. Therefore, the world of good and bad, of thorns and flowers, can become a place of splendor only. I think about, for me, I am very inspired, of course, by Hazrat and Naik Khan, but also the mystic beings that sometimes had this, you know, the torture of a stigmata, but at the same time were in complete rapture. There's a story that I think Joe Miller used to tell the story. Ollie Cotter, you might remember. Joe's teacher, remind me again, who was Joe Miller's teacher and inspiration?
He was a theosophist and was really into the Mem Blavatsky and all of that, but I think ultimately it was the Tibetan Buddhists and Padmasambhava and, well, and the teachings of Yopa and Marpa and...
But he had also an Indian teacher, a Hindu, didn't he, that he was very... Maybe it was just he was telling the story, but it seems like being in their home, there was a picture and...
Ramana Maharshi, that's true.
Ramana Maharshi, yeah.
He had no teacher. Ramana Maharshi was just on his own experience.
Self-realized. But I think it was Ramana Maharshi that had the terrible diseased arm and like cancer, like flesh... coming, you know, I mean, it was like awful, like, and he just kept saying, it's all right, you know, he was using, and we hear this of a lot of lamas, they use that suffering, and even like bugs would get on it and sting him, and, you know, he never reacted, he just sat in this equipoise, but he was also taking that pain on as a transformative process for other beings. I mean, who could do that? You know, I myself have heard stories of very close association with people that I know in the Tibetan Buddhist teaching where someone's been in the hospital and they've denied treatment because they know that this is part of what they need to do to help with the transformation of karma. I mean, who of us could just like, give me that morphine, you know what I mean? But they do it willingly and consciously. Go through this process.
I thought I heard more than one account that Ramana Maharshi actually took on one of the devotees' disease.
I have no doubt about that.
And that was what he felt, and that's what he did.
Yeah.
The ending of it was they were all, well, don't leave us. And he would say, leave you, where will I go?
Yeah, where am I going? I'm there and there and there and there. Yeah. I had my own experience in that way, where Karuna Mai, who some of us know, had come to visit us, and I was about to have some radical surgery. And there was suspicion of what this mass was, and of course Murshida Vera had given me some beautiful practices to work through that process to discover where the disharmony had come from, and Karunaji had given me, she had flown Delta, and she had those little teeny soaps that you get on the airline, and she had taken them and she was holding them in her hand, and you could tell that she was praying, and she said, now I want you to bathe with these, and just let me know what happens, right? So she had gone back to India and she called me and she said, are you having any pain? And I said, no, it's kind of miraculous, I'm not having any pain at all. And she said, very good. Well, I've just seen a doctor. I got a little prick on my foot and it's turned into a huge infection. Same thing. Yeah, I'm really very sure. But she took that on. You know, God bless her. She's still in the body. I should invite her again to camp. The sixth valley, again, we're still in the same sixth valley, the valley of amazement. Man recognizes and understands what is beyond all things. seek to know that which transpires behind that which appears. The reason of all reasons, the cause of all causes, for all intuition and power develop in man with this unfoldment. We were talking a little bit this morning about virtue and what defines a virtue, and you know that sometimes can be in one moment this might appear as a virtue, and then the very next moment it may under the circumstances be non-virtuous. And Mercia talks about that a lot. You know, what is the gain and the loss and the loss and the gain? You know, it's like a koan, but if you look at it, for every gain we do take on a loss. And for every loss we do give up something as well. You know, and he talks about that regarding success and failure, how those things actually teach us if we allow them to transform us. It's the same principle here. But we're often just, you know, fighting it so much and resisting. Surrender, faith, the hidden hand of God in all things. What's the baby's name?
Isaiah.
It sounds like he's saying, ah, ah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so the last valley, and you know, I think these things, these vibrations of Mercia's words penetrate us. Not so hard even, and then you're off the hook, you're not going to have a test tomorrow. So you don't have to like, oh my God, write it down, study it tonight. Crema, you're just like, can I look at your notes tonight, last night? I want to remember everything. It goes, and the vibrations go in. So we've gone through it fast. It may seem superficial, and yet something you'll see will happen. Is happening. So the last valley, if we can stick with it all the way, is God realization, which is ultimately self-realization. And the seventh valley, the valley of God realization, is the valley of that peace which every soul is looking for, whether spiritually or materially, seeking from morning until night something which will give it peace. To some souls that peace comes when asleep. But for the God conscious, that peace becomes his home, her home. As soon as one has closed their eyes, as soon as one has relaxed their body and stilled the mind and lost the limitations of consciousness, one begins to float in the limitless spheres. To float in the limitless spheres. Sometimes it happens, doesn't it, in our practice? Sometimes it happens in zikr. Sometimes it happens in nature. You know, it's there to be aware of that, to be awakened to that. It's so beautiful. And ultimately, in a lot of ways, we are being the agent of the divine in everything around us. As it's all happening anyway. Can we reside in that peaceful state of both observer and participant? There have been even times, Karima Gita is also my colleague, and the college where we teach, sometimes there can be some real challenges that arise. It happens that we have a group of women that are fairly conscious. Doesn't mean we always agree. And it happens that the faculty, the full-time, are all women. That in itself can be a challenge, too. But You know, I have my pictures of His Holiness, of Gandhi, of Comte Rinpoche, of, you know, Hazrat Khan, and people don't know who these are. They just think they're relatives, you know, unless they know Gandhi. And so it's like, yeah, and it's like, is that, you know, they've looked at pictures of Hazrat Khan. Is that your dad? It's like, yeah. But people also feel a kind of comfort in the office. I'm not there very much, but when I am, even some faculty have like, can I just come and sit here, you know? But also, you know, I have all of my things. I have my holy water there, you know, and I'll go around if there's a challenge with a faculty member when they're not there and throw it in their office, you know, and say some prayers. It works somehow. It just does. You know, the intention's there and things start to become harmonious. But we've had some really big challenges and it's like, okay, there's no way this change is going to occur. All we have to do is trust and pray that the evolution of what's happening will be for the good of all. We'll learn something, and that maybe obstacles in the way or people that need to move on, we just hope that they realize they need to move away from this environment, find something else that fulfills them and makes them happy and clears a space here. And it has been unbelievable. Without making a lot of waves, the changes, isn't it?
So that number six, the hidden hand of God, is that number six?
It's God, the Valley of God Realization.
Number six was amazement.
Oh, amazement. Was it amazement?
Yes.
She's a good... Oh, she's looking at her neck. No.
Yes. Okay.
See, I have any
amazement.
So the hidden hand of God is in the amazement after annihilation.
No, that's not
because
she was... It's knowledge.
Unity.
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 That comes after amazement.
Yeah.
No, unity was before amazement.
Oh.
It comes after annihilation.
Yes, it does. That's right.
Then
amazement.
Amazement, and that's the hidden hand of God.
Well, the hidden hand of God is all the way, I think, all the way. But, you know, there's this beautiful quote, and I probably have it in my papers, but and I'm going to paraphrase it because it's from one of the sutras, and I love this, love just the first line. Suffering leads to happiness. It's kind of this whole path here. And he goes through, it's teaching some of the oldest teachings by Lord Buddha, and it's like, let's see, I was recalling it earlier.
That's hard to tell you.
But it's this whole thing like, joy leads to happiness. The whole point of it is, and I maybe if you're interested I'll send it or put it in these notes, because it's a beautiful teaching of how there's this process, and probably it's actually probably six or seven steps the same, but it's like suffering leads to the end of it is that all we go through this and we find all these attachments in these various mental or emotional states, and when we get to the end what happens is actually we become so disillusioned that we see through everything instead of being deluded by it, and that then releases the ability to feel true happiness, which is what Murshid is also saying. It's our thoughts that are creating our happiness, our unhappiness. And it's the perpetuation of that. I mean, I think one great cure is, again, do something different. And that something different is praying. Praying. In prayer. It's so much can happen in that. Or your wazifa, your breath. It's all prayer, really. And most importantly, I can say, serving others. It helps us forget ourself and our self-cherishing. You know, it's like that story of the butterfly. You know, you can just chase it with a net and chase it with a net, and it just... And then if you just sit really quietly, how many times has that happened to you? They just come and... Is it just... Right? that comes to us. So let's do the practice together, and I want to explain the wazifas again. And the two wazifas are wasi alim, wasi alim. Wasi is this ever, a scientist might say, the ever expanding universe or reality, but it's translated also as something that surrounds, something that embraces, something that's womb-like, and it also is translated as, in the Quran it says, Allah, surround us with your compassion. Allah, surround us with your compassion. So it's all surrounding, embracing, and expansion at the same time. So it's not limited like a container that we're put in. It's expanding. And I had described yesterday when Pir Vilayat, and some people have said it was helpful, so I'll explain it again for those that weren't here. When Pir Vilayat we'd work with Zikr for days and days with him in our leaders training. And he would give us the negative form of the zikr, where it's this sort of eradication of the notions of oneself, one's limited self, with, of course, then the la ilaha, there is nothing, there is nothing, there is nothing. And then we would do the il alahu, sort of very strongly with the Il, or Anayat Khan would say El, El Allahu. We hear it both ways, Il and El. El, striking that center of the solar plexus, where we may feel like we're gathering power, but it might be a false sense of power, and it would just shatter. It's like, again, he would say, shatter the ideal on the rock of truth. And those pieces would be drawn and extracted like through a centrifugal force by the movement of the zikr to scatter out just in their energetic form to transform, be transformed. And then the Allahu. And then we would go through days and days and days of this. And then we would go through days and days and days of the positive zikr. And with the positive zikr, he would give us this. He'd often associate wazifas with the stages of the zikr. And so with the positive zikr, it was about the sense of this all-encompassing, this all-inclusive, embracing, gathering as we did la ilaha. And we would bring all these attributes which were divinely and inherently ours, with the L, to allow them to then emerge and infuse our being. And he would describe this in the most beautiful terms, like this, that we were these diaphanous forms that were not solid, but we were just light beings that were undulating and moving. So we had this great capacity to be elastic and dissolve and reform. It was these beautiful visions that he would give us and allow us to sort of transform ourselves through these practices. So wasi is this ever-expanding quality, this all-embracing, without confinement. And this is from the Physicians of the Heart. The practice of wasi will be helpful for those who have fears of envelopment, fears of having a relationship, or fears of surrendering. Through invocation of this sacred name, we overcome being smothered and instead allow ourselves to be truly embraced. O Allah, surround us with your compassion. O Allah, surround us with your compassion. And Aleem, again, from the first day and also yesterday, again from the Physicians of the Heart. The omniscient knowledge of God, its ultimate meaning is all-inclusive. Al-Alim means the emanation of knowledge that reaches everything. It penetrates everything. We start to see the hidden hand of God working in all things. And really and truly, if you're suffering, I think it's because we've lost that capacity or openness to trust that. Again, our happiness and unhappiness are created by our thoughts. Considering all its various forms, Al-Alim is mentioned in the Quran more than any other single attribute of God. Yawasi. And remember, think of Wasi as this 360 degree experience moving in every direction. And with Alim, bring the concentration into the five-pointed star at the center of the forehead and put the glance upward as if you're looking at that star, and let the star also expand from its five points, rays of light emanating out. And at the, each end of those rays, there is another star emanating infinite rays of light. And again, they work together because this Alim is penetrating at the same time, and also vast, that it penetrates. It penetrates things to realize the divine knowledge of everything. And Wasi is also encompassing, so they're working together. Okay. Ya Wasi. Ya. And let the lips come together on Alim, and send the vibration there, radiating out to the third eye, center of the forehead, or could be the center of the brow. You'll know where you feel it. You'll feel it possibly start to vibrate in that center. Ya Wasi. Ya Lin. Ya Yalim. And allow the rays that are at the farthest most point to start making their journey back to their star and back and back and back until all that beautiful light and energy resides and is contained in that one singular star at the forehead. May we be blessed and graced with the knowledge, true knowledge, divine knowledge, the knowledge of the one and only being. And let that star descend through the palate, the throat, the heart. And you might allow it there to make its journey in each of its arms to fill your two legs, your two arms, and your head, the five-pointed star. And while those five points remain, we can also see the star of the divine light shining in thy heart, being reflected in the hearts of thy devotees, residing at our hearts. Namaste, the namaste. I bow to the divine light. within you and you and you. And under the star comes the beautiful crescent moon, receptive and reflective of this divine light, empty yet also brilliant with the light. And surrounding the crescent moon, embracing the Wasi, the Alim, the star, we see the heart form around them. And extended from the heart are the wings, the breath of God. Be ye sons of glory. When Saint Teresa of Avila wrote about that in The Mystic Journey, The Interior Castle, she did not write the word sons, S-O-N-S. She wrote it S-U-N-S. Be ye sons of glory. Be ye sons of glory. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Seek to know that which transpires behind that which appears, and you will see the hidden hand of God in all things.